Advanced Studio Classroom is on the air. Come along as the advanced team heads to some great locations and takes in some beautiful wildflowers. Hello, listeners. Welcome to Advanced Studio Classroom. This is Bill Quinn, and today is April 3rd, 2013. And we begin a travel article today, a two-day travel article. You can find it on pages 12 and 13 in your Advanced magazine. And we're talking about wildflowers. And there are some great locations around the world, destinations maybe for a holiday trip for you. To go see some nature and just see some of nature's beauty. And we're going to go visit some of these places over the next 2 days. Joining me on this journey are my two panelists, Amanda Young-Pier and Brian Hagerle. Hi, panelists.
Hello there.
Hello, Bill.
Great to have you here with us in the studio today. And first, Amanda, now let me ask you, hailing from lovely New Zealand, I imagine you've got some beautiful wildflower locations there.
We do, actually. Many times, because we have a lot of mountainous areas and just beautiful green, I would say, pastures, we do have a lot of wildflowers.
The first place I'm thinking of right now is Queenstown.
Mm-hmm.
And I imagine right there, just getting up in the mountains would be a great place to see some wildflowers, actually very similar to what we're talking about here.
I think we're going to find they're very, very similar. You know, just it's an alpine area in Queenstown. And so, especially during the springtime when the snow is melted and the flowers come up, it really is beautiful and very, very colorful.
Yeah. Okay. Also, Brian, now I know, you know, when you were back in America, maybe you had a chance to visit some of these places that we're talking about. We're not just in America. We're going to be in Europe also. But have you had a chance to get maybe say Great Smoky Mountain National Park?
Yes, I have, Bill. I was in on the edges of Great Smoky Mountains National Park a few times. I spent most of my time more in the Appalachians, but I did get to see the Smokies and, of course, it's very green, very, very colorful, beautiful area there.
Yeah. I know you, Ed, did go to school in Virginia, and you were all around the North Carolina and Tennessee area.
That's right.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'm glad you're here. I've had a chance to visit a few of these places. I have been on Mount Rainier, and then also in – I actually lived in the Carolinas and Georgia, so I was in the Great Smoky Mountains National Park a lot of times. And then I actually was up very close near – Waterton Lakes National Park, which is right across the border from Glacier National Park in Montana. So I've had a chance to visit at least three of these places in the past. And I'll tell you what, I do. I love it. I love getting out and hiking and getting out, especially up in the mountains where a lot of these wildflowers are. And they're in some pretty rugged areas. And there's something about this different types of growth and vegetation that do take place in these areas. So it's interesting to go and see, you know, some of these places off the beaten path. Don't just go visit the big cities when you do go on your vacations. Get out. Go see nature. I'm always telling people when you do travel to America to visit the national parks. And I think you'll actually remember that stuff a lot more. You might remember it all your lifetime instead of – a lot of times the big cities, they all look alike. They all have got the same restaurants and the same stores. But if you can get out and see nature, you will see things you've never seen before. So let's take a look at our reading for today there on page 12. We're going to break it down into each section. So we'll have three readings today. So let's have our first reading, that left column.
Wildflowers. Wildflowers have become a travel destination. Nowhere is nature's yay more apparent than a good display of wildflowers. Seeds are splitting, shoots are shooting, buds are unfolding to show the colorful petals they've concealed. Some destinations and stretches of land bloom with such awesome endlessness and ferocity of color that they've created a tourist industry of their own. Over the years, as habitat has dwindled and pollinating species have declined in numbers, groups across the world have formed to protect and propagate species. You can find wildflowers pushing through a crack in a parking lot or clinging to a wind-whipped mountaintop. Still, there are places where wildflowers bloom more showily in habitats around the world. We've gathered some of the top wildflower destinations from a variety of sources.
Okay, wildflowers have become a travel destination. So, you know, have you, either one of you, ever planned a trip mainly for nature?
Sure.
Have you done that?
Sure. I've planned a lot of fall trips in America to go see the fall colors.
Okay.
Yeah, a lot of the times to go and see the spring colors throughout New Zealand.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, there's all sorts of different types of trips you can take for this. For one, I can think of here in Asia, a lot of people will travel to Kyoto to see the cherry blossoms, the sakura. Mm-hmm. And so that would be a great example of people, you know, making a trip just to see some natural beauty. And, of course, there's many places around the world for you to go and see, you know, talk about mountains. But here we're talking about the flora mostly. And there's, you can go, whether it's jungle, go to see the Amazon to see some jungles, or even in Malaysia, or just to see flowers. There are many, many beautiful places with a diverse range of flowers around the world. So now, how do we start, Amanda?
Well, in the first line we see, it says, nowhere is nature's yay,
yay!
More apparent than a good display of wildflowers.
All right. Now, what does that mean?
It means that here in this place, we see that the wildflowers are very clear in this location rather than other locations. And so people respond when they see the flowers by being very joyful and yelling out, yay.
Almost even you could say the flowers are yelling out, yay, right? They're just like bursting with color and life. So the flowers and the people are very excited about this. And we continue.
Well, we see that the wildflowers are alive because seeds are splitting, shoots are shooting, and buds are unfolding to show the colorful petals they've concealed. So good use of the active verbs here to paint the picture of how the flowers are growing.
Yeah. And you make a very good point, Brian. That's a great way of writing. You want to be active with your writing. And so the writer has taken a very active approach here. You want to put that in the beginning of the sentence instead of being passive. So it's very descriptive, being active here. And they show the colorful petals that they've concealed. What does that mean?
Concealed means being hidden.
Okay. All right. So normally the buds are closed and then they open up usually as far as when the weather warms up, the sun comes out. Now, what about some of these destinations?
Well, we see that some of them and stretches of land, which are just pieces of land, bloom with such awesome endlessness and ferocity of color that they've created their own industry where people want to come and see these flowers for themselves. So this is describing the colors here, ferocity of color. They're so bright and so remarkable that they leave an impression on people.
Now, ferocity here is a noun, but normally we would think of ferocity from the adjective ferocious, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But a slightly different meaning.
Mm-hmm. Ferocious, oh yeah. It's a little bit more, what would you say, like violent, like maybe a lion.
A lion or something is ferocious. But
right.
We're not talking about the flowers being ferocious.
No, they're not ferocious.
How do we mean ferocity here?
We're talking about the color. Like the color of the flowers is so vibrant and so bright that's what we call is being ferocity. You know, it's so, maybe the color is so bright that it's violent.
Yeah, the color is actually, we might even say aggressive, very bold. We would say certainly not mild, but very bright colors. So now, there have been some problems with the environment, right?
That's right, Bill. The habitat or the area where these flowers live, where they are native to, has dwindled. That means it has shrunk in size. And so, therefore, pollinating species have declined in numbers.
All right. Well, now, what does that mean, pollinating species have declined in numbers?
Those are the plants that are actually able to reproduce or create other plants.
Yeah, because, you know, there's a lot of different reasons for this as far as, you know, there might be overbuilding in some areas. There is, you know, development. The natural areas are being reduced. So what you have is a natural declining of all species, whether they be animals or plants. And so then there become fewer plants that can breed and seed and create more. So
I think a good example, maybe some people know, is that movie. There was a movie, Bees, you know, from Disney that showed, you know, when we have these big cities, then they're unable to pollinate the flowers to then continue growth. So that's a problem. And so here we're seeing the result of that.
Yeah. All right. Okay. Now, in response to this, what is happening? What's the second half of that sentence?
Well, what's happening is a lot of groups across the world have formed to protect and propagate species. So there are garden clubs and organizations that have got together and wanting to protect these plants and make sure that they are pollinated, that they are growing, and so that they don't become extinct.
Okay. So when we say propagate, what do we mean?
We mean to produce a new plant from a parent plant, thereby allowing the plant to spread.
Yeah, so it's interesting here. While we say the term wildflowers and we think of just plants naturally spreading, there is actually purposeful direction here and work and effort that's being put forth. They are actually doing what they can to sustain each species of the different wildflowers. So, all right, now, where can I find wildflowers?
You can find them pushing through a crack in a parking lot or clinging to a wind-whipped mountaintop. So I think in this example of a sentence there, they're showing extremes. You know, a parking lot is, you know, in a busy city. But even though it's a busy city, there's still a life trying to form there through the crack. Or on the top of a mountaintop, you know, where they are swept, we say here clinging, which is hanging on to a wind-whipped mountaintop. Wind-whipped means that they're being struck by the wind time and time and time again.
Okay. So normally I might think of flowers like, you know, roses or things like that. They're more cultivated, and it takes gardening and specific planting to make that happen, whereas wildflowers, they don't need such nurturing, do they, Brian?
No, and that's what I like about wildflowers. You know, sometimes you'll find them a splash of color in a place that you don't think you would find color, like a side of a road or a highway, for instance. Mm-hmm. It'll just show up and catch your attention right away.
Yeah, and so we see here in this next sentence, still, there are places where wildflowers bloom more showily in habitats around the world. So we're saying, in this sense, wildflowers can grow anywhere, but the still there means like, but there are specific places where they are on their best display. That's what this showily is saying, right?
That's right. Showily mean you can see them very clearly, maybe very flamboyantly, which is another word to say that, although that's quite difficult, but just meaning that they show, you can see them very clearly. Just like we saw earlier, it talked about verosity of color, very bright.
Mm-hmm. And also probably in numbers too, I would say. There are certain places you can go and you'll see far greater numbers of them. So now we've gathered some of the top wildflower destinations from a variety of sources, and that's what we're going to cover the rest of today and tomorrow. So let's check out our first location.
Mount Rainier, Washington. Why? Rainier is the tallest mountain in the Cascade Range. The national park encompasses 235,625 acres on the west side of the range, and because of its elevation, offers a variety of habitats. In a single-day hike, you can see the very best of the flowers of the forest, subalpine, and alpine zones. The Paradise section of the park is famous for its glorious views and wildflower meadows. Skyline Trail to Myrtle Falls also offers a wealth of wildflowers. And Spray Park Trail has as many flowers as Paradise, but far fewer visitors.
Okay, Mount Rainier, Washington. One of my favorite destinations, Mount Rainier. It's a great national park up there outside of Seattle. Of course, when you are in downtown Seattle, you can just see Mount Rainier. It's majestic off in the distance, and it's a fabulous place to visit. So I would recommend to anybody, if you do go to Seattle, set aside 2 or 3 days and go spend them at the park. Stay overnight for a couple of nights, and it's a great place. You'll love it. So, and so close, so convenient. So you can get there in about an hour, hour and a half. So now we ask the question here, why?
Because Mount Rainier is the tallest mountain in the Cascade Range. Bill, do you know where does the Cascade Range stretch? Does that go through more than one state?
Well, the Cascades, actually, they are in Washington and Oregon, mostly. So, and they are, you know, located there from north to south, and so it's along the coast, and then also some go further east. One thing about this, I want to correct this sentence or at least make an addendum to it, is that Mount Rainier is actually the tallest mountain in the contiguous 48 states in the United States. So of all the 48 states together, it is the tallest mountain. Now, the tallest mountain in the United States actually is Mount McKinley in Alaska, also known as Denali, which is over 20,000 feet. But Mount Rainier is the tallest in the contiguous 48 states. Now we read about the national park.
Yeah, we learn exactly why it may be a great place for wildflowers. It says the national park encompasses a large area, 5,000 acres on the west side of the range, and we learn because of its elevation, it offers a variety of habitats. So a lot of different wildflowers actually make this place their home.
It is a huge park. It's amazing. And Mount Rainier is actually a volcano. Mm-hmm. It's a dormant volcano, as many of the mountains are in the Cascade Range. So there's volcanoes dotted all the way around this range in those two states, Washington and Oregon. And, of course, the most famous one being Mount St. Helens that had actually erupted 25 or more years ago. So there have been, you know, talk about the possibility of Mount Rainier erupting.
Uh-huh.
Someday, and that possibility always does exist. So, but now we're talking about something much calmer. We're talking about wildflowers and taking a hike there. And what can we do in a single day hike?
Well, you can see the very best of the flowers of the forest, including both subalpine and alpine zones. Mm-hmm. And an alpine zone, Bill, is relating to high mountains, especially the Alps. But here it would be just a mountain region. So subalpine would be below a certain elevation. I'm not exactly sure what that would be, but alpine zone would be a higher elevation.
Usually about 8,000 or 9,000 feet. And actually what that'll also say, so you could also say above the tree line. So that's usually what we mean by alpine or subalpine, depending on the tree line, 8,000 or 9,000 feet. All right, which section is do we head to first?
Well, we learned there's a section of the park that is very famous for its wildflowers. It's called the Paradise section, and it has glorious views of the wildflowers and beautiful meadows.
Mm-hmm. Okay, it's a great place to walk around and enjoy the trees and these meadows, which are actually small ponds and large high areas with high grass and very lush. And then we head up a little bit further.
We go to the Skyline Trail that heads over to Myrtle Falls, and that offers a wealth of wildflowers. And anytime you have a wealth of something, you have a lot of it.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And finally on to
the Spray Park Trail, and that has many flowers, just as many flowers as the Paradise section does, but we learn that it has far fewer visitors. So if you're a person that enjoys being amongst the wildflowers but don't like to be amongst the crowds, then Spray Park Trail is probably the best one for you to go to.
And this is true anywhere you go, especially in the national parks, is that I remember at the lodge there, they have a number of trails that do start at the lodge. However, most of them are going to be pretty busy. Mm-hmm. A lot of hikers right there because it's a central location. People like to park around there. They congregate in these areas. And I would recommend that you talk with some of the people in the National Park offices. They've got information offices. They can direct you to nice trails that people don't go to so often. And you might want to go there. Less crowded. You can enjoy some peace and quiet. I do recommend that you do go with a group. I would advise you to not go by yourself. For a lot of different reasons, and just personal safety. And I'm not just saying it's you might fall, you could trip, you could hurt your knee or ankle. There are animals out there, so It's always better to travel with a group, 2, 3, 4 people. Don't necessarily go by yourself. Okay, now let's head off to another national park in the eastern section of the United States.
Great Smoky Mountains National Park, North Carolina and Tennessee. Why? With more than 1,600 flowering species, it's earned the nickname Wildflower National Park. Variations in elevation, rainfall, temperature, and geology contribute to that diversity of flowering plants, more than in any other North American national park. The show begins in February with the ephemerals such as Trillium, Iris, little brown jugs, and violets making brief appearances through mid-May, followed by extravagant displays of mountain laurel, rhododendron, azalea, and other heath family shrubs flowering en masse through July with aster, goldenrod, and Joe Pye weed, up to 10 feet tall, lasting through the fall.
Okay, Great Smoky Mountains National Park, North Carolina and Tennessee, and actually it straddles the border of North Carolina and Tennessee, so it's actually right where the two states come together, and half the park is in Tennessee, half the park is in North Carolina, and it is a beautiful part of the country, fairly remote, so it's a good bit away from urban areas, and the mountains are... normally they're, for the most part, between 4,000 to 6,500 feet in height. And it's just lovely because some of the roads that drive through there are just so nice and winding and beautifully tree-lined roads. So it's a great place to go for a vacation. All right. Now, why there, Brian?
Well, it has so many different species, more than 1,600 flowering species there. So it has earned the nickname Wildflower National Park.
Okay, now what are some of the reasons that create this situation?
We see that there are variations in elevation, so how high things are, the rainfall within the national park, the temperature, and the geology. Geology meaning just how the land is made up. And so these all contribute to the diversity or the variety of the differing flowering wildflowers within this national park.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, the geology, for instance, there might be very different soils and stones that the plants are growing in. And, of course, certain plants can only grow in certain types of soil. So that would be part of it. Now, and it's actually more than in any other North American national park. So it's got the most wildflower species than any other park in America. It is a big place. It's a very large national park. So now, when can we see these flowers?
Well, we see in the sentence it says, we can see them when the show begins in February. Now, of course, we're not talking about a concert here, when we say the show. It just means that we begin to see the plants flowering in February.
I tell you what, it's cold in February there in that park, so it's still going to be freezing. It's still going to be about 0 degrees Celsius. So it is cold, but the flowers can still grow, some of the wild flowers. We see the ephemerals, such as trillium, iris, little round jugs, and violets, making brief appearances through mid-May. Well, of course, by mid-May, the temperatures now are much better. It's rather pleasant at that time. And ephemerals are just one type of flower. It's a category of flowers. We've got ephemerals, perennials, annuals. There's all different types of categories in flowers. And these were just not intended to last a long time. So they're only going to be there for just a few weeks, each one of those types of flowers. So they're very quick, and then others come along. So then in the summertime, it is followed by what?
Extravagant displays of mountain laurel, rhododendron, azalea, and other heath family shrubs. So these are different kinds of flowering plants and bushes. And I did learn that the heath family shrubs include also the common fruits blueberry and cranberry.
Ooh, all right. Well, there, you know, what's funny is there are a lot of berries up in this area as far as the blueberries and cranberries, raspberries and blackberries. One of my favorite things from this area, which I really miss, is that there's so many places you can go and get like these pies made. You know, blackberry pie and raspberry pie and blueberry pies. Oh, and they're just fresh. They just picked them. So it's wonderful. I really miss that. So I used to go driving up there often, maybe at least one weekend a month up in this part of the country. So it was – I just miss it. So
you're making us hungry, Bill.
Making you hungry. All right. Now, if you're hungry for flowers and shrubs, though, you can see them flowering. How?
En masse through July with Esther. And so en masse meaning all together through the month of July. And then we learn the different kinds of plants you'll see in July. Esther, goldenrod, and Joe Pye weed. And that can reach up to 10 feet tall and then last through to the fall. So they don't die as quickly as the others.
Okay. Well, I would recommend Smoky Mountains National Park, and you can access it whether you're in Atlanta, Nashville, or Charlotte, North Carolina. And it's a great place to go for hiking because it is very temperate for much of the year, from mid-spring until late fall, which is a good period of time. The temperatures are nice, and you can go there and have some really nice, pleasant hikes. And so if you do visit that part of the country, take a couple days and head on over there. Well, make sure you head on back here for day two of our article, Wildflowers. Till then, this is Bill.
Amanda.
Brian.
Saying goodbye.
Goodbye.